Well, hello again from Toowoomba in Queensland, Australia. This is Cool Paradiso, and this is episode 18 of Songwriters and Original Songs. Another great cast again today, a bit of a mix of old friends and new people. Our special guest is Jerry Pettit. Great to have him on. And our songwriting corner is Dragon Dreams, who we've had a special guest before, but it's great to have him back. First up song today is a guy I've known for a little while now, lovely guy, beautiful voice, and his name's Justin. Just released an album, and this was recorded, I think, maybe in October or written in October or something like that. And he just released this only the last few days, and it's called Don't Let Them Make Your Heart a Stranger. Isn't that nice? He's got a lovely, relaxing voice. Always enjoy listening to him. Does a lot of songs like that. Also does some instrumentals. A wide range of stuff. Really interesting. Great. Next up, another person I think we probably have played before. Jessica Gray. Lovely voice. This is a really haunting song. Really poignant storytelling. And it's called Banners.
Banners in a reverent manner here in Ridley Park. These men, they were fighters, were battle igniters, they fought a war. Is that all you get, just a flag of your own? You've no regrets, cause you're not coming home. You fought a war that was all based on lies, but still they said you made a great sacrifice. A man of not 20, his image above me, the boy next door. his young face so gentle, so full of potential before the war. Is that all you get, just a flag of your own? You've no regrets, 'cause you're not coming home. You fought a war that was all based on lies, but still they said you made a great sacrifice. War has no winners, just beggars and sinners, a big charade. The mothers who miss you, the wives who can't kiss you at the Veterans Parade. Is that all you get, just a flag of your own? You've no regrets, 'cause you're not coming home. You fought a war that was all based on lies, but still they said you made a great sacrifice. They're taking down banners and putting up Santas here in Ridley Park. They're taking down banners and putting up Santas here in Ridley Park.
It's a cool song, isn't it? It certainly tells the story.
Well, it's time for Songwriter's Corner again, and today from the mists of the Northern Hemisphere and Castle Dragon Dreams, we have Mr. Dragon Dreams himself. Welcome. How are you?
Oh, I'm terrific. Thank you very much. Just very cold.
I thought you'd like that introduction.
Yeah, it's lovely, was that? Yeah. Oh, I might even use that.
You like the mists of Northern Hemisphere.
The mists of Northern Hemisphere. Yeah, that's going to be my bio on form this year, definitely. I'll credit you with it. Don't worry.
Oh, thanks very much. So now you have been a special guest of mine before, but just for those who've not heard, tell us a bit about your musical style and what instruments you play. I know there's a few secrets in there.
I don't really have a style as such. It's just whatever occurs to me. A lot of my stuff can be quite cinematic, would you say?
Look, it's interesting. I was talking with Gary Kirby, you probably know as well, GM7.
Oh, yeah.
He said, we had this conversation that probably one of the things is that the fact that we are all formers and we all get on well is probably because we are also eclectic in our style and our taste. And it is very hard to categorize any of us.
It is, yeah, because I do heavy metal and folk quite happily. And I'll mix the two up in the same piece. And thanks to you, after we had our last conversation, I did that whole journey from sort of complicated to naive and made that work.
Good.
Which I really enjoyed doing, which opened up a sort of different vista for me. So doing spoken intros and then matching a piece of music to the little bit of spoken intro, which it got quite entertaining towards the end, because I was like, oh my God, what am I going to say next? And how am I going to follow that? The whole naivety thing was really good.
The great thing with the opportunity to put quite a bit of music out there is you can try different things, can't you?
Whereas, yeah, it's that safe sandbox to play in, isn't it? And I love that idea.
Mm.
Instruments? Bass, guitar, recorders, learning the flute at the moment. So that might be featured in form this time around.
How are you finding that?
Difficult.
You got that mouth shape ready?
Yeah. I'm working on it, because it's hard and it's tiring. I think that's the word I'm looking for. But I'm working on it.
Yeah. Because, of course, you're a good recorder player, and at least you've got the finger in notes. At least it gives you
the breath control is there as well.
So,
just learning the embouchure that's giving me the grief at the moment.
They are tricky. Yeah, I used to have one around somewhere. I'm not sure.
I've rented one. Rather than invest at the moment, so I'm renting an alto flute.
Mine was a family heirloom, so
lovely.
Not that old, but it's come down through a couple of generations. It's around somewhere. Cool. They're great. They're the best heirlooms, aren't they? Musical instruments.
They are. Yeah, ones that you can play. Yeah, because the only one I've got is a balalaika, which is just occupying space in the attic at the moment.
Yeah, I have a balalaika and I play it occasionally, but I can never really find what to do with it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly that. You say, well, what do I do next?
Yeah, I think every year, and to be honest with you, and I said this before, you actually inspired me with my recorders because I've always
Oh,
played them all my life, and I've always
excellent.
said, and I think I might have told you, Katie Pierce, she often plays recorders in things, and
Yeah.
Chanta Claire, I think she goes under the name sometimes, and but I could never find the place to put them. But I listened to some of your music, I thought, oh, I've got some ideas now. And so I actually, as you know, I did a couple of them in 5090. So,
Indeed,
and I think we
yeah.
might even, I'm pretty sure that they're sitting on the side. So I'm pretty sure they're going to come out for form somewhere. So,
Oh, excellent. Yeah, well,
isn't
this is it. We've got to do it. And we've started this little trend, I think, of the fipplers.
it?
So
The fipplers, that's
the
right.
fipplers, yes, fipplers unite.
Yeah,
Excellent. You
I
got
might leave the banjo in the cupboard, leave that to Staples.
Yeah, let him deal with that. Yeah. It's his problem
Yeah, that's right. We won't worry about
now.
that. And I think you've shared with us once before, a lot of people don't realize that you are actually really deep down, you're a bass player, aren't you?
Exactly, yeah, and it's I find that quite amusing that the people know me as a guitarist. I'm actually a bass player, but they get surprised when I play the recorder, and that was my first instrument, so it's all yeah, it's it, I like ringing the changes.
Well, we were brought up with eclectic, we were talking, I was talking to somebody the other day, people like Jethro Tull, where me
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Anderson used to play the flute, but he was a fine guitar player too,
Yeah,
a very fine guitar player.
I must admit, I was quite surprised the first time I did see him play the guitar. Because I
Yeah.
thought, oh my God, he really is that good. But then,
Yeah.
yeah, why limit yourself? It's let's go for it.
Okay, now we get to the impossible questions.
Oh dear.
Oh dear, I know. Everyone
Remember, it's
says, oh
late.
dear. I know, everyone says
It's
that.
late.
No, it's early here.
Yeah, some of us have been up since 5 a.m.
Favorite band or artist?
Oh, difficult. It depends on what mood I'm in.
Yeah,
At the
well,
moment,
give us
it's
a couple of
Polyphia.
moods. Who?
If Polyphia.
Olivia.
Polyphia, very accessible, complicated music. When you
Okay.
listen to it, the chord sequences they use are very engaging, the very common chord sequences, but they do this sort of flexing and making it sound very complicated. So yeah, Polyphia, very, very good, progressive. I would say the next generation of guitar playing. When you listen to, I think it's Tim Henson is the lead guitarist. But when I'm wanting to drive around and get somewhere quickly, it's Dave Lee Roth. It's because it's just old
Yeah.
school.
Yeah.
Let's go for it. Emerson, Lake and Palmer were the band I discovered for myself when I
Yeah.
was a teenager, so they have always been one of my favorites. But people like Camel, King Crimson, Jethro Tull, as we mentioned, but then Steel Eye Span, Fairport Convention, just loads and loads. It depends on what mood I'm in, what I pick off the shelf.
Do you know, funnily, I wouldn't have heard this for years. I was listening to the TV and they played Nut Rocker.
Oh, good grief.
Yeah, and it was Emerson, Lake and Palmer
It
version.
was the
Yeah,
LP. Oh, wow.
absolutely. And I wouldn't have heard, I remember buying that, like it seems like 100 years ago.
Oh, it was
But
100 years ago, wasn't it? It was printed on vellum.
well, yeah.
It wasn't
But yeah, I couldn't
vinyl.
believe I heard it. And I listened to it, I thought, that's the original. And
Yeah.
it wasn't even in context that I heard it at all. And I thought,
Right.
oh my goodness, I haven't heard that forever.
I think one of the saddest things about getting to our age, I won't say what our age is, but is when you walk around a shopping mall and the background music is the stuff that it was all the rage when we were growing up. So you start listening, you're hearing Black Sabbath when you're walking through the middle of Woolworths, and you think, ah, dear.
And Air Day, all our generation of Air Day would have been tutting, Black Sabbath,
Exactly.
all
Yeah,
that rubbish
all
noise
that rubbish.
stuff.
Yeah. My father always said, he spent his life making record players not make horrible noises, and there I was buying ELP. Bless him.
About favorite album?
Struggling. Possibly Passion and Warfare, Steve Vai.
Yeah.
Possibly, but the a little ain't enough. Dave Lee Roth at the moment. It's on. It's constantly in the car. It's just on repeat play. Yeah. Wish You Were Here. That one gets played an awful lot.
Yeah.
Time Is the Key. Pierre Morlaine's Gong is another one that gets played an awful lot in this house.
I knew you'd come up with some good names.
You know? Oh, thank you.
Yes. I keep this so I can go back and add to my playlist.
Oh, good, yeah. If you can find a copy of Time Is the Key, you'll love it. It's absolutely brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
I'm a good sleuth. Yeah. I'm a good musical sleuth.
I've owned several copies on vinyl over the years. I first heard it when I was 18. And every time I bought a copy, it went missing at parties. And eventually I found it on CD, and I've actually made a hard copy of the CD just so that if it ever goes missing again, I've still got it. But yeah, okay. Pierre Morlaine's Gong, Time Is the Key. Absolutely brilliant piece of music.
Okay. So who did you, obviously Emerson, Lake and Palmer, so who did you, in those formative years, who did you listen to or go and see? What was your first concert?
First concert was Camel. At Bradford, yeah. It was, we went from, actually, no, I'll tell you a lie. That was the first one I went to see that wasn't at school. We had Bebop Deluxe came and played at the school I was at. I was at an all boys grammar school, and we had Budgie, Bebop Deluxe, and various other bands came. And I was lucky enough to be asked if I'd do the lights when Bebop Deluxe were on. Which meant I just sat in the lighting booth and watched somebody else work all the faders.
I haven't heard that name, Bebop Deluxe, for you. Ever.
Well, Bill Nelson only lives up the road, used to live just up the road from where I am now. Serious? So yeah. The local lad was our Bill. Yeah.
You haven't heard that for ages. I heard that. There was some. And what was your first instrument?
First instrument was Descant Recorder. I think I told you the story about how I learned to play recorder.
Yeah, because you thought it was the other kind of recorder.
I thought it was a tape recorder. Yeah,
yeah. I do remember. Yeah,
yeah.
Oh, that's great. That's a lovely story.
And it's a happy accident, is that one? But it was the Descant Recorder. I've still got that Descant Recorder as well. I think I recorded a piece in form last year with it as a tribute to my mother who'd bought it for me.
I must be one of those latent ones too, because I've got my original Descant Recorder too.
Excellent.
Yeah. Maybe there's something about them, if you know.
Once you've got it, you've got to keep it.
Well, thanks, Dragon Dreams. I've got a lot more yet, and we'll play some more of that interview on probably the next episode. Next up, we have another guy I don't think we have had on before, possibly one song. Does quite a lot of songs all through the year. Mike Hex, his name is, from the US. And as I say, he churns out some really good songs. This one has a really crunchy, catchy riff line.
Every likely schemer has got a hole, a time to burn. Any piss and poser can just hope they get a chance to learn. You go to ground. The job's gone wrong, you go to ground. When the heat is on, you go to ground. When you've been made, go to ground. When you don't have a play, lay low. Lay low. When you feel uncertain and nothing falls your way, skip that final curtain. You've got no cause to stay. Go to ground and sit out the dance. Go to ground for a better chance. Go to ground. There ain't no shame. Go to ground in playing the long game. Lay low. Tender, worth their salt, knows that timing is everything. Opportunity is the split between a criminal and a king. So go to ground till the moment is right. Go to ground, prepare for the fight. Go to ground, plan it through. Go to ground and take your due.
Yeah, enjoyed that. That's a bit different. Nice to hear Mike. And as I say, that's a great guitar line in there too. Next up from the lovely south coast of England, Costa Geriatrica, some people call it, Eastbourne, Major Danbury. And this song's called Brush With Death. Find your happiness on anyone else, on anyone else, anyone else. Ironic, really, that title after what I introduced, wasn't it? Great song, though. Really nice. Okay, next we have person I discovered in form, I think, last year, Blind Sheepdog. Great, again, from the UK. Really, really good singer. Great guitar playing. So this is Blind Sheepdog with Overcome Myself.
Can't understand this world consumed by wealth.
Okay, it's time for our special guest. And this time, it's another person I've actually been trying to get on since the start. He's one of my go-to crooners. I think I've just about listened to every song he's ever done over the last few years. He's a retired attorney. Back in the day, he was once in his young days in a rock band. He's now a singer-songwriter. He's done three, or he may have even done four albums. We'll ask him about that. He's sort of in the jazz, pop, country style. I sometimes call him the missing Beach Boy. So he's become an online friend of mine, Jerry Pettit. Welcome, Jerry.
Hi, John. How are you? Nice to finally meet you in person, sort of.
That's right. sort of.
Not that it's nice, sort of, but we're meeting, sort of.
Yeah, it's a bit like that. One of the great things of being doing this podcast is that I've got to actually talk to with many people that I've shared a lot of music and a lot of time and comments with over a number of years. So it's always good to catch up and have a good chat with people.
Well, and you and I have done a lot of that because you're very prolific during 5090, as am I. You did almost 100 songs this last time, I think.
Yeah, probably.
But we actually weigh in on one another. We're each other's number one fans, right?
Well, I think I was going to say that. I think we probably are each other's fans. we need all the fans we can get, don't we?
Yeah.
So Jerry, how did you get started in music? I noticed that you were in a rock band in your 20s. What started you? How did you get into it?
Well, I've always, both of my parents were very big in music. They were in like orchestra when they were in college. My mom was a piano teacher, and so she taught me piano, which I hated, and only stuck with it for about 6 months or so. But I always kept the interest, and we always had a piano in the house, which is nice. That was a real luxury. And I always, you know, pounded away at it and picked away at things. I was thinking, you know, some of my formative thoughts were the very first album that I bought was the Pink Panther soundtrack by Henry Mancini. That was first album. You know, you would have expected me to say Beatles or something like that, but no, that was the first one. And I think my second one was another soundtrack, and that would have been John Barry's Goldfinger. But then the Beatles came along and, you know, had to collect them all. So I, you know, bought all the vinyls and then all the 8-tracks when that started coming around, and cassettes when that was a thing, and eventually the CDs, and who plays CDs anymore other than me and you?
Well, funny enough, I saw Alex Klages, Metalfoot. He is a famous CD player. Alex always plays CDs. He often posted what CDs he's listening to. He's a big CD listener. There's a few out there hidden. I've got a few, as you can see over, you know, got a few on my, but all of my music's on digital now. It's just, I just don't get around to listen to CDs very much. It's always on my music system, so I just can find what I want pretty easy.
Well, the only time I listen to CDs anymore is when I'm in the car, and I'm just not in the car that much.
Yeah,
don't have the long drives.
So what sort of rock band were you in, Jerry?
Well, it was actually a very popular band back in Omaha, Nebraska, which is what I consider my home. I'm in the Washington, D.C. area. And what had happened was I sang at the wedding of an old girlfriend. And the guy that she was marrying was a drummer for a band that had been very popular in my heart. When I was going to high school and going to dances, he was the drummer in this band. And it turned out that the rest of the wedding party, the ushers and best men, they were also in that same band. It was a band called the Green Giants that was real popular back when I was in high school. And then there was another guy there from a band called the Fortes. All of these guys were like 5 or 6 years older than me. They'd been in bands before, but then Vietnam came along. A couple of them ended up going to Vietnam, but now they'd all ended up in the Omaha area where I had just gone to go teach high school math after graduating college just a few months before. I jokingly said to him at the wedding, I said, "Hey, you're not looking for a piano player, are you?" I'm just joking. And they said, "Well, you know, maybe we are." Well, later that week when they called me out of my geometry class to come because I had a phone call. And one of the guys said, "Hey, why don't you come up to our house and try out for this piano thing?" I had just been joking, but I did, and it did okay enough to get into the band. And the rest is rock and roll history, as they said. And we were actually a very, very popular band in Omaha for the year and a half that we lasted. I actually made more money playing in that band than I did teaching high school back then.
Oh, cool. Well, that's great. But you gave it all away. You gave it all away to be an attorney.
Yeah, well, I mean, the band did bust up for whatever reasons. The other guys were all 5 or 6 years older than me, for one thing, and they were all married. So I was like the only single guy in the band, which, by the way, was not a bad thing. I'm not complaining about
that. No, I can.
But it did bust up because they had family responsibilities. Guys were starting to have kids and things like that. So I'd always kind of been interested in going to law school. So I took the test and I did well on that. And so I got in, and the rest is legal history now. We went from rock and roll history to legal history.
So did you really step out completely from music for a long time?
Yeah. I always maintained the interest, but then, you know, family gets in the way.
Yeah, for sure.
I got married, had three sons. It was 1992 when computer music started happening. I was always kind of a computer buff because I'd been the math major and the math teacher, and I used to read PC Magazine, and PC Magazine which stood for personal computer. I don't even think they make a paper version anymore, but I was a monthly subscriber. Actually, I think it was every couple of weeks it came out, and they would have these articles on MIDI, M-I-D-I, which, of course, you know, is a musical instrument, digital interface. And I just thought, well, that's kind of an interesting concept. But I kept up on it. And finally, one day in 1992, I went into a music store and said, hey, I'm interested in getting, you know, starting to do this computer stuff. And so they sold me a used Roland D10 keyboard. And, you know, I had a clunky old computer with, God, I think it had like 20 meg of memory. That was back when they measured memory in megs. Now they do it in terabytes. Yeah,
for sure.
But and then I back in the early 90s was when I found out about Band in a Box, which I know you are familiar with too. And I use that a lot to kind of lay down some of the basic tracks for my songs.
And so when did you start writing songs again?
I would maybe write a song every few years for a special Mother's Day, something, you know, some kind of little romantic sappy thing for the mother of my kids or my own mother. But I really, and I always intended to sign up for FOM, you know, I would read about it on the internet. You can, you know, write a bunch of things like this. And I was retired. I certainly had time on my hands. But I think I signed up like in 2012, 2013, never did anything with it until 2017. I don't know what motivated me, but I actually said, okay, I'm going to write 14 songs this time. And I did. And it was just life changing, as I'm sure it was for you when you did it the first time. And then I did sign up for the 50 songs in 90 days that takes place later in the year in July, August, and September. And got all 50 songs the first time I tried it too. And it was just, you know, I've never looked back. That was just such a wonderful, great experience. Hard work, but that's how you get there. And it's my passion now.
It's funny, isn't it? So when you sort of come to something like FOM, you don't really always know how long the other people have been around. I sort of presumed you'd been around a bit longer than that. See, I think 17 was probably the first year I seriously did FOM, I think, too.
Yeah.
The same. Yeah. So we probably actually started doing it regularly, probably at about the same time. So I didn't realize that. So you get 50, you know, as you said, you were, you know, 50 songs is a lot of songs. A lot of people out there are going, 50 songs, you know, amazing. How easy do you find it to do 50? Where do you get your inspiration for 50 songs?
Well, I always start with the title. As a matter of fact, I've got a spreadsheet now of titles I've collected, you know, because I know I've got every year I'm going to have to do 14 and then 50 later. So I want to have titles there. And so I'll just randomly pick the title. And I've collected them over the years with just things that come to mind. And then I will riff on book titles or movie titles. But once I've got my random title for the morning, then I just jot down some ideas based on the title. I will occasionally, again, I'm Mr. Random because I'm a math guy, an arithmetic guy. And so I have, I'll ask my Amazon Echo Alexa for a random number, and I will use that to select maybe a random song, and I'll take its lyrics. I'll take like three different songs' lyrics. I'll look through them and try and come up with interesting phrases that maybe I will be able to use in a song. I might pick a random page also, thanks to Alexa, to come up with a phrase from a book of poetry. I'll set them there in front of me and see if anything starts working. You know, they say the best, the great artists copy. I don't copy that many phrases, but I'll use them to try and for inspiration.
Absolutely.
On lyric.
Yeah.
So that's kind of my methodology.
Do you write all in one go? Do you sit down and do you finish? Yeah.
Yeah. The first several years of like 50-90, I'd pick my title and I'd write the lyrics. That usually takes about 45 minutes, sometimes an hour if I'm struggling with it. And then I go up to my little bedroom studio and I'll lay down, you know, like the drum, I'll go to Band in a Box to lay down the drum track, maybe the bass and some guitars and things. And you know, chord progressions, which again, I come up with those randomly. Once I've got like the bare bones to the song, I'll sing and, you know, maybe put in some melody stuff. And then I'll start putting in the ear candy, you know, maybe some synthesizers, some strings, some other orchestral stuff, which of course, as you know, you can do that very easily if you're a keyboard player at all. Then you just buy the symphonic software and you know you've got all kinds of stuff that you could do for the ear candy part.
You don't actually do a lot of collaborations. Is there any reason for that, or is it just the way it's been?
Well, not that many people ask. I've got two or three people that I have collaborated with. It is always them approaching me.
You definitely does something with Bill White.
I want to make sure I get my songs out. But then like at the end of 50-90, I usually will do a couple of collaborations with people that have asked me earlier on. And you know what? Some of those collaborations have ended up being the best songs of the bunch too. You know, because maybe I'm motivated to, okay, this is a special song because it's a special friend that wants me to do a good job with their lyrics. The collaborations are always somebody's done the lyrics and then I do the music and the vocals. And I have enjoyed the collaborations. It's just that, you know, I am more interested in doing my own stuff. Now, you did a lot of collaborations this last time around because you have just got a ton of poetry that you'd put out.
I've always got words, but also, as I said last time, I didn't have the ability to record as much, so doing lyrics was an obvious thing for me to do, and you know, if you can write the lyrics and people are happy to do it, it's always interesting to see. But I think the key, you're right, I write a lot of songs, so I still do a lot of my own songs, but I don't give away the ones I want. Do you know what I mean? I don't mean that sound nasty, but like once or twice in the early days of collaboration, I gave away songs which I really knew what they should be like, and then you're only going to be disappointed. So you should only give away songs you really generally are happy to, whatever you get is whatever you get. But if you give something away and you know what it's like, you're probably going to end up disappointed. So a good friend of mine did a song for me once, and I should never have given it to him because he didn't do it the way I wanted. And you know, you're not gonna fall out over it, but it was just the way it was. And I thought afterwards, it's a lesson learned. It's great to collaborate, but only collaborate when you want somebody else's input into a song, not if you really know how it goes already.
And again, it is such a passion of mine now, and I do enjoy it so much. And I don't know if this happens to you, but I will occasionally, I'll finally, you know, after 6 hours, 8 hours, maybe more than that, and the song is done. I've had some of them that You know, I get teary-eyed and a little choked up at how pleased I am with how it came out. Does that ever happen to you? It's
supposed absolutely, to. Absolutely. Yeah. So sometimes I say some awful, some swear words. I go, "That's good." Like yeah. I surprise
myself. Oh, I do too.
I go, I sounds
awful.
I mean,
that's a good one.
Yeah, that's exactly what I've done a couple of times. I thought, I just did that. That's yeah. really cool. Yeah. And you know, I think
that's why we keep doing it is because
yeah.
It's not the same thing as the birth of a child and all the pleasure that comes with that, but in a way it is metaphorically, you know, you put a creation out there into the world that you're doggone proud of.
It is a big buzz. It is a big buzz when the one gets right. You're right. It is a huge, huge buzz. And I think that, you know, people, it may be partly at our time of life or particularly when we're not relying just on music for an income, which is a tough gig, you know, but I make music for myself. I love that other people like to listen to it. But at the end of the day, if I make it and enjoy it and no one else wants to listen to it, it doesn't really matter too much.
Exactly. You know? Exactly.
So it's very different. So, you know, I think it's different if you write for yourself or if you write for other people. So.
Well, and another thing that I've gotten out of FOM in 5090 that surprised me is these friendships.
Yeah.
I've got a number of Facebook friends now, that people that I've never met, like yourself, that you know are still near and dear to me, and that I interact with regularly, and because absolutely. You know we're kindred spirits and like minds.
Who was your influences? Come on, you got to tell me now. You got to remember them too.
Remember what?
Your influences. Who are your influences?
Oh, my influences. Well, I'm old, but I'm not going to tell you how old. So, well, in the three songs that you're going to play, there's one that's jazz, there's one that's country, and there's one that's pop, as I recall. So jazz-wise, I mean, I'm not a big jazz person. I'm mostly a pop person. And that my number one influence, like it is for most people of my generation, I think, were the Beatles.
Yeah.
I mean, what an influence they were. Because, I mean, they weren't just pop. They started out just poppy little yeah, yeah, yeah people, but they ended up inventing genres and really stretching their wings, which is something that I think we all try and do also. But I also love classical music. When I was in college, man, I had all of Beethoven's symphonies and I listened to them a lot. I told you the first couple of albums that I bought were like Mancini and then Barry's James Bond thing. So I've always liked that. Country is just something that I've learned to love the last 10 years or so. And what I like about country is, I mean, I love writing sad drunken songs. Yeah. And country's just so cartoonishly great for that. I don't spend a lot of time listening to country on the radio, but it's so much fun to write and record and sing.
Yeah.
So
listen to you, I can see how you love your Beach Boys-y style stuff, and I can see how see how you love your jazzy stuff, and it suits you. But your lyrics are very country driven, aren't they? They are. You're right.
Yeah.
If in doubt. That's right. Lost the girl, didn't get the girl, in the bar, waiting for the next one. Yeah, that's a Jerry lyric if I've ever played. Hey, look, we better play a song, Jerry. We've talked for a while, which is great. How about we play them? I think, and talking country, how about we, I think this one's more country. I'm a Lucky Man. Yeah, is that what we're playing?
Yeah, I'm a Lucky Man.
Tell us about it.
Well, that's like 3 or 4 years old. It's on my third album, I think. I think it's on the album that's entitled 1 a.m. at the Holiday Inn, the title time of which I think you're going to play later.
We will.
It's just a basic. Actually, this one is not a heartbreaking song. This is a romantic love song. And so just go ahead and play it. I don't have a big backstory to it, other than I must have been in a good mood that day.
I must admit, when you sent me the three songs, I looked at them and I thought, no heartbreak songs. What's going on here? A country song, though. But yeah, this is a country style song. So let's play. This is Jerry Pettit with I'm a Lucky Man.
When I wake up and you're lying beside me and I'm watching you breathing, I do what I can to try not to disturb you, leave you there with your dreaming. I'm reminded again that I'm a lucky man. When you wake up and I'm lying beside you and we smile at each other and you take my hand, no words need to be spoken, for your eyes tell the story that your love is forever.
Well, that's definitely that is a nice Jerry song, isn't it? I like the girl and I've stayed with her. That's a beauty.
Yeah, thank you. I should write more of those instead of these sad, pathetic ones.
You say that every year when I write a song like that, and you still go back to your songs. So how come, what strikes me, how come you've never actually sung jazz?
Well, that's not easy to do. I mean, I'm not Frank Sinatra, if that's what jazz is. Are you talking about like biddly bop bop doo?
Well, no, perhaps I'm not really talking jazz. I'm talking more what I loosely call the crooner. I mean, you deny being a crooner. You refer to people like Gwyn Jones as the crooner, but I think you're one of the best crooners around. And I wouldn't call it jazz, but it's almost a lounge singer style, you know, and you seem to do that so well. I'm just surprised you never actually went in and sang in the lounges, you know. You have a job, but you know.
Well, and thanks for that. I don't, when I think of a lounge singer, I think of somebody like Sinatra or Tony Bennett that's got more of a baritone voice. My voice is pretty darn tenor, and I don't think of that as lounge singing so much, but I do appreciate the compliment. I used to not be particularly happy with my voice because I think I thought it was too high, and it's just been the last couple of years, thank you FOM and 5090 folks, that I've gotten a lot of compliments on the singing, because back when I was in the band, I didn't get a lot of compliments on my singing. I only sang a couple of songs. We had plenty of other vocalists in that rock band that I was in back in my 20s. I only sang two songs. One of them was John Lennon's Imagine, and the other one was Danny and the Juniors' At the Hop.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
you can rock,
sure.
You can roll it, you can roll it, At the Hop. Yeah, I remember it well. They pretty much just kept me on the back burner for singing harmonies and things. So I think maybe that wounded my feelings or something. And it's only been the last couple of years because I've gotten compliments that I've gotten more confidence with my singing. So thank you for that.
Yeah, well, I think you've actually got a unique voice. And you're right. It probably is a bit higher than those, but I don't think you're out of that range of singing, to be honest with you. But so it's always interesting. So Jerry, who would you like to, if you had a choice, who would you like to share a stage with or play with or whatever?
That would probably be Paul McCartney, because I just think he's God. I'm so pleased that I was able to see him once with my youngest son, because all of my boys are big Beatles fans, because that's how I raised them.
Absolutely.
But I really, that's who I'd want to share a stage with. Bob Dylan is somebody that I very much appreciate. And, I've got all of his, not all of his CDs, but a lot of them. But I'm not sure he's somebody that I would want to share the stage with unless I was one of the Traveling Wilburys. And it would be fun to be a Traveling Wilbury. I miss those guys. God, who have we lost? I mean, Roy Orbison.
George Harrison.
Yeah. Tom Petty.
Yeah.
I mean, they're most of those guys are gone now. I mean, they're you, and this last couple of weeks, we've lost Jeff Beck. We lost David Crosby a couple of days ago.
Yeah. It's, well, it is, I suppose. It's one of the downsides of us getting older ourselves. We're watching all the others drop off.
Well, get used to it.
It's not going to change. But yeah. But McCartney is an amazing person, isn't he? For someone that we've all known since we were kids, he's amazingly kept. As you said, you feel like he's a bloke that you could go up and have a chat to still, don't you?
Yeah.
He's. And that, I can see why you'd want to. I always have this debate with people about who you want to stage. If you were going on stage with someone, you'd sort of want to compliment them or feel that you would. I mean, you're obviously always going to be outshined by McCartney, whatever you do, I guess. But you feel he'd drag you along, wouldn't he, a bit, you know?
Yeah. Did you see the little mini documentary series that Rick Rubin did with McCartney? I think it was something called like McCartney 1, 2, 3.
And it was McCartney 1, 2, 3. It was fantastic. I thought him and Rick Rubin were absolutely brilliant. And having the master tapes and going through and seeing how they put things together. Anybody who's a songwriter interested in music, I mean, I think anybody would enjoy it, but if you're particularly, to hear how they did stuff was, I thought that was one of the best shows I've seen. I thought it was a mile better than the...
Get Back,
mile better,
Yeah, I enjoyed it a lot more too.
Me too, yeah.
I enjoyed them both, obviously.
Yeah, for sure.
I enjoy McCartney.
I got a little bit sick of the Get Back, here in the 73rd take of Don't Let Me Down,
that was still interesting to me.
I know.
Again, the Beatles were just everything to me back then.
Yeah. So did you ever get stuck to write?
Like writer's block? No, that has actually not happened. I mean, obviously I had a whole lifetime of writer's block until 2017 when I started doing FOM. But FOM doesn't allow, it shouldn't allow you to have writer's block. I know people struggle to get their 14 or their 50 during the July, August, September thing. But no, I just grind away. Are all of the songs instant classics? No. But I do churn them out. I mean, you don't seem to have much in the way of writer's block. You churn out more than I do.
Yeah, I mean, I do have writer's block, but mine lasts about 20 seconds. And I'm not being trite about it. So I do know what it's like when I look at something and I can't think. But for some reason, I seem to be able to unlock it in seconds, whereas other people, it might take them an hour or 3 days or 3 months to unlock it. So I sort of do understand what they mean. Sometimes I get a bit and I walk a couple of lines and I think, I don't know where this is going for a bit, and I just, but as I said, somehow I find ways to find it. But so I say I do have writer's block, but not by what most other people describe writer's block, I guess.
Well, and again, I've got that methodology where I'm using random numbers and stuff. So that's part of the getting me over the writer's block is, yeah. By golly, Jerry, this is your title today. You'd better write a song one way or the other. And here's some random phrases from random songs. See if you can work those in, but using your own tastes.
Look, I'm absolutely with you. I'm from that background that says, yeah, I can write a song in an hour, or I can write, sometimes it might take a day or whatever, but whatever. I always can finish a song, but I find that the more I place a time frame around it, I don't think I make songs worse. It just makes me focus, you know. Yeah. If I say I've got to write in an hour, I write it in an hour, and a lot of people wouldn't realize that, but I actually heard someone talking the other day. Who was it I was listening to? It might have been McCartney. It was certainly something about the Beatles. And I'm sure Paul said that him and John never sat down and didn't finish writing a song.
Yeah, I just saw that the other day.
Yeah.
Heard it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I must admit, I hadn't really even thought about that because he said, and they wrote like 100 songs or more in a short period of time, and he said they always finished the song and they didn't leave until they finished the song. So, yeah. You know, like, and those songs are standing the test of time, so I feel in good company.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, let's play another one, Jerry. How about, okay, we'll play that title track of that album, One. Now I know it's called 1 AM at the Holiday Inn. Anything you're going to tell us about that one?
Well, actually, that is a significant song for me because that was the first one that got me attention with. Okay, let me back up. Deep breath, Jerry. I have belonged for several years to the Nashville Songwriters Association International, NSAI. They are the world's largest songwriters organization. You got to pay dues and stuff. That's mm-hmm. the downside to that. But early on, when I think I've been a member about 5 years or so, and the first couple of years, I used to, because this was part of what you get for your dues, I used to send songs and then they would be reviewed. And I always told them, don't worry about my feelings. I want a good, hard review. This song, 1 a.m. at the Holiday Inn, was a song that I sent to him. And the guy got back to me and said, I got nothing bad to say about this. As a matter of fact, we're going to put this one in the list we do every month in the newsletter, putting you as one to watch. And indeed they did that. So I bandy that about when I'm marketing my music. I'll say, you know, NSAI calls this guy one to watch. We have a mutual friend, John Staples.
That, of course.
Yeah. When I put this, hey, look at this, I got a one to watch. And John Staples chimes in and says, yeah, but they didn't say one to listen to.
You just say back to him, and no one wants to listen to your banjo, Staples.
Exactly. We get... But the point being, I made that the title song to my third album then, and I am pretty proud of it. I don't do that much jazz because I don't have horns, and it's hard to fake horns.
Yeah.
But there's a little bit of horn, courtesy of Band in a Box, on this song, but yeah, this is probably my best jazz one anyway.
Okay, well, let's play 1 AM at the Holiday Inn and Jerry Pettit.
I know you're all wondering, so let me begin. How did I end up here at the Holiday Inn? A man of such talent should be out on tour. How did I end up here in a place so obscure? First, thank you for coming, time to finish those dreams. Be sure and tip the waitress, then go get your 40 wings. If any of you single gals want my autograph, leave your number on a napkin, we'll have a few laughs. I'm singing here thinking, how it might have been. The band's kinda sleepy, the crowd's kinda thin.
but I'm building our standards with a wink and a grin. It's 1 a.m. at the Holiday Inn. Room is provided, that's part of the deal. My microphone's packed, I should grab a late meal. Look around for those napkins, no one's left me their phone. Guess I'll go straight to bed, tomorrow breakfast alone. I'm singing, you're thinking, how it might have been. The band's kinda sneaky, the crowd's kinda thin. Building our standards with a wink and a grin. It's 1 a.m. at the Holiday Inn.
It's a singer's song, isn't it? It's a singer's song.
It is, and I think I do a little bit better singing on that one, you know, with a little bit more feeling than I used to do when I was singing. That's not a bad vocal performance, I guess.
Oh, I think it's very good. I think it's a very good vocal performance, but you know, I'm convinced.
And I kind of like the story too, because there's so many musicians out there like that. They aren't necessarily playing at Holiday Inns, but you know, it's the classic. I love music, and this is how I want to make my money, so I'm going to sing wherever I can get a gig and sing until 1 a.m., and it's lonely, and yeah.
Just a quick question. What are you listening to now? Do you listen to any more modern stuff now? What would a Jerry listening list look like?
I remember, again, I only listen when I'm in the car. What I try and do is listen to the Grammy Award nominated songs and just try to keep up on modern music. And I try and, you know, I try and listen to the best country songs, the best pop songs, the best crooner songs every year. I don't listen, even though I like hip hop music in the background or in a movie soundtrack or something like that. I don't just sit around and listen to hip hop particularly. So, but I usually will listen to the Grammy nominated hip hop album, also rap album. So that's what I mostly listen to. And I'm doing it for educational purposes as much as pleasure there, because I'm trying to learn what people are making sounds with these days. And I try and have that then influence what I end up doing later myself.
So what advice does young songwriters, Jerry?
Well, join FOM. Again, it was life-changing for me. And I've heard other people say that so much that it's such a supportive atmosphere. In February, I mean, most people don't get it done, but if you do want to make a musician of yourself, I can't think of anything that would be better than signing up for FOM and writing some songs. Even if you just have a piano or a ukulele or a banjo, even that would be the best thing you could do. And write lots and lots and lots of songs, write lots of lyrics. Do try, you know, take some piano lessons. I hated them myself, and I only took them for 6 or 9 months from my mother when I was 6 years old. But it gave me enough of a foundation that, you know, I can still play keyboards, sort of. And, you know, that's all you need to do, to pound out some chords or learn how to play the guitar, you know.
So have you got any goals or ambitions musically going forward?
You know, I've started marketing my music more. Like, I'm taking some of the best stuff and I put it on Spotify, and I've been running Facebook ads to try and market them to strangers, not with any resounding success just yet. And likewise, I've tried to, there's a place like one that comes to mind is a place called SubmitHub, SubmitHub.com, where it's curators of playlists for Spotify. Yeah. And you can go and, you got to give them a little bit of money, but they'll you send them a song and give them $2 or $3 or whatever. And they'll say, oh, it's a terrific song, young man, but just not for us. And so then you're out with $3. But I have gotten on a few playlists, nothing resounding with thousands and thousands of listeners yet. But yeah, that's what I'm doing now is trying to market the music. It's my expensive hobby now.
Right, fair enough. Well, Jerry, I think we've covered a lot of ground today. It's been so good to catch up and chat with you. Thank you so much for coming on and talking to us today.
Oh, thanks for having me, and I really enjoyed talking to you too.
So just tell us, we're going to play out today to a song which is called To Be Friends Again. You talked a bit about that, so do you want to say any more about To Be Friends Again?
Just that if people do think that it sounds like Todd Rundgren, let us know, because
you never
or
know.
If you think I sound like a crooner on it? I don't think I sound like a crooner.
I don't think you do on that one. It's more of a singer songwriter song to me.
Yeah.
Okay, look, thanks very much again, Jerry. So we're going to play out to. So this is Jerry Pettit with "To Be Friends Again."
Again, after so many months on my own, early on you were much inside my thoughts, and that's something I'm sure you have known. I think to myself that you're so right when you hint that you made a mistake. Now you've called and you act like there's nothing wrong, like we only were taking a break. Maybe you should like to be friends again. I don't see that working for me. I'm looking for someone that I can love and brings out the man I should be. I don't want a pal who just pities me and expects that I'll always be there. So when you have your own heartbreak and come to me, I just cannot pretend that I care.
Eat well, I guess, what's the harm in that? So you give me a time and a place. I don't expect much, but we meet in your touch when we hug and your hand on my face. I've missed you, you say, and I nod right back, and we look into each other's eyes. There is sadness there, we remember the love, but love goes to hell when it dies.
That we try things again. There's a part of me wants to rant and rage. There's so much to get off of my chest. But then what's the point? We've been hurt enough. So I leave, hug you, wish you the best.
Bet it you'd like to be friends again. I don't see that working for me. I'm looking for someone that I can love and who brings out the man I should be.
So thanks again to Jerry Pettit for doing that. It was good fun to have him on. I had a good yarn with him. Next up, we're going to play some rocky stuff, a good old friend of ours, and this is Robin McKenzie with Way Back Home. Excellent song there by Robin. Last but not least, another guy. I think we've had one song before and I'm a great fan of. I think it's a great song to finish off. It's Alvin Wolverton and it's called All My Dummies.
Downstairs. I love all my dummies doing whole shit. I love all my dummies doing grandma's hair. I love all my dummies doing no shit. Look at the way we're tipping. Bird in the wind, you do what you want. On the floor, in the street, on the stage, in the seats. If the spirit moving you, show me what. All my dummies. All my dummies. And do
the street, on the stage, in the seats, the spirit moving you. Show me what that don't mean. All my diamonds. I love all my dummies like I love myself. She could be my dummy when I let her. Every single dummy going dumb, dumb, strong. I love all my dummies doing better. Look at the way we're tripping. Dirt in the wind, you do what you want. On the floor, in the street, on the stage, in the seats. Put the spirit moving you. Show me what that dummy do. All my dummies. Do I love all my dummies? All my dummies. And do I love all my dummies? On the floor, in the street, on the stage, in the sheets, the spirit moving you. Show me what that dummy do. And do I love all my dummies? Street, on the stage, in the sheets, get the spirit moving you. Show me what that dummy do. And do I love my dummies?
As I said, such a catchy number, really cool, excellent song. Okay, well, amazingly, that's it again for episode 18. Thanks for your continued support. All the formers will be busy writing songs in February, so good luck to all of them. Now, you stay safe out there. Until next time, this is Cool Paradiso signing off.